Hey everyone, welcome into the Woj Pod. My guest today, Boston Celtics forward Gordon Hayward. And Gordon and I get into the entire free agent process that led him from Utah to Boston. We go inside those 4 days in July that shaped his decision, the meetings with the Miami Heat, the Boston Celtics, the Utah Jazz, the conversations with his agent Mark Bartlestein, with his wife Robin, and just the process with which a player of his caliber goes through to make really a life-changing decision in a very short window. I think whether you're a fan of the Celtics, Miami, and of course Utah, I think you'll be fascinated by Hayward's mindset, how he went about this, and how much he labored over the decision to leave Utah to go to Boston. I think you're going to enjoy this one. Here's my conversation with Gordon Hayward. Here in San Diego with Gordon Hayward. Gordon, how are you, man?
I'm good. Doing well.
First of all, why would you ever leave San Diego for any part of the year? How did you grew up in Indiana, you played your NBA career in Utah. How did you end up living in the outskirts here of San Diego?
Yeah, so my wife and I were looking for a place to kind of call home base. And actually talking with Quinn about it, and I think he had spent some time in this area and said, you got to go check this area out. It's beautiful. It's, you know, same temperature, sunny, 70 and sunny year round. It's a lot of, he knew a lot of other good people that were around here. And so we came and checked it out and, you know, 10 minutes from the beach and you got the city of San Diego, you got LA, a little bit to the north, and found a house and just went with it. So
if the Clippers were still here, would this be like, this could be a destination NBA place, couldn't it?
100% could be. I know a lot of guys that come here and either have houses here or come here on vacation, and it's a great spot to be.
You'll start to head back to Boston in August, September?
Yeah, early September. We'll head back there, and you know, we found a place, and so we're in the process of moving all our stuff over there, and we're excited about it. You know, I think it's going to be a change, but I think a good change for us. And I think we'll get there early September so we can kind of, you know, get a feel for the area we're living in. And, with two little girls, you know, like to find some spots that we can go to all the time and little things that they can do, little parks or, activities. So go there September and get ready. The season's starting earlier this year anyway. Right. So
let's get into the free agency. And, you know, for years, you imagine, you watch other players go through free agency, you see other processes, and I'm sure every player imagines what it must be like. When you think about how you imagined those, you know, essentially 4 days would go, or even the walk up to free agency, did it play out the way you imagined? Did it turn out to be a different, like, do you have to experience it to understand all that goes with that?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to sit back and you see people like yourself and ESPN and all these other writers speak on, you know, sources say, you know, this meeting went well, or so-and-so's thinking about this, or and it's easy to say, well, why would he go there, or why is he thinking about this? But it's something where when you're in the situation, it's completely different. And it is kind of like what you're saying. You kind of have to experience it and to know what it feels like. I mean, you're making a life decision, and it's not something that you can just do. You got to think about it. You can't just sit there and say, "Oh, well, I would go here 100%." You know, I wanted to go visit the cities. I know some people have all the teams come to one spot, but I wanted to go and check out the cities because that's where I was going to live. That's where I was going to be every day, and I didn't really know what to expect. It's something I've never really experienced too much. I wasn't recruited highly out of high school.
Right.
You know, so I didn't go. I went on one official visit in college, a couple unofficial visits, but that was it. And so it was going to be a new thing for me to experience. And, to be honest, I really didn't think about it at all throughout the summer, of exactly what it would entail, you know, constantly thinking and talking with my agent about where we think we might want to be and that type of things, but didn't really know how it would be, the chaos that it would bring, and just the kind of exhaustion that you go through when we traveled from San Diego all the way over to Miami, then to Boston, then back here, all within 3 days. And at the same time, you're trying to make a life decision and think about what's the best decision for me and my family. And so it was definitely a whirlwind, experience.
So I believe, and I guess it was probably in June at some point, your agent, Mark Bartlestein, came out here to your house with you and your wife and your family and kind of laid out, okay, here's our options. Here's what each place offers. Was that sort of the beginning of crystallizing it, but did you start to sort of narrow down your focus when you guys started to visit leading up to July?
Yeah. So we narrowed it down and, I think it was early June to about 3 or 4 teams. And he had laid out basically every scenario and situation as far as the money, as far as the team roster, as far as like taxes, everything that you could imagine. I had a whole packet of information and we discussed all of that. And like I said, narrowed it down to about 3 or 4 teams. And then from that point on up until July, we're constantly just talking about it. I'd give him a call randomly. If the playoffs were going on at the time, and I'd give him a call randomly when I was thinking about something, and we'd talk about it for 10, 15 minutes, and, you know, then have a completely different view the next day. And we'd talk about, you know, a different team and why they were better, and that was a better situation for me. And so, we had a lot of discussions leading up to it, and I think that was really helpful, because it allowed me to kind of prepare myself mentally and kind of continually think about which situation would be best for me. So I wasn't just showing up on July 1st, like just now going into the free agency part of it.
You had it to 3 teams. You had Utah, Boston, Miami. Was it on purpose that some guys take 6, 7, 8 meetings? They do it in one place. Everybody comes to them. And like you said, you wanted to get out physically and go to those places. I would guess that Utah and Boston were pretty clear cut that they were going to be part of the process. Was Miami the one that you sort of added to that list or pared down to going into it?
Yeah, Miami was one that when we looked at the teams across the league and teams that would be a good fit for me, Mark, my agent, was really high on Miami. And I think Boston and Utah were, like you said, kind of obvious places that I wanted to check out. And Miami was a spot that the more and more we talked about it, the more and more it looked like this would be a really, really good fit for me. And we actually broke it down and had like a point system of, you know, different pros and cons and on a weighted scale of, you know, different things that each city would represent and each team would represent. And Miami was always near the top of the rankings when we did it. And I did it probably 10 or 20 times and it always changed. That's how close everything was. And so, it really came down to the visits, and we basically said, you know, these are all 3 really good options, but you need to go check it out for yourself and meet these people and meet the organization and see where you're going to be at. And I think that'll give you a clear picture of where you'd want to go.
I want to go through the Miami visit with you a little bit, but sort of, when you look in the calendar here of the walk-up, Utah was trying to reshape the roster in a way that you'd be pleased with, that they felt they could improve on. A couple things in Utah. They made the trade for Ricky Rubio, and that point guard position in Utah has been in flux for almost your whole career there. You've had a lot of different guys in and out there. Some work better than others. You had success with George Hill last year. He was injured a bit. And then, of course, he was a free agent. The Rubio part of it, that was I know Utah talked to a lot of teams about a lot of point guards, but I know it kind of kept coming back to Ricky. What were your conversations with Dennis Lindsay, with Quinn Snyder, about if they traded for Ricky, how that impacted your thought process?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of was a difficult situation because I don't want to be somebody that says, you know, you go get this player and, you know, I'm 100% in. If you trade for so-and-so, you get rid of this guy, you go get him. Like, I didn't want to make demands because I didn't know if I was going to end up there. And it wasn't a sure thing. I had told them, you know, I wanted to go check out these other teams. And, you know, that being said, they asked me, you know, how do you feel about these guys? And, you know, I would tell them, and, you know, Ricky was a guy that was high on my list. I think he's an underrated point guard and, can really pass the ball and, does a lot of really good things well. Shot the ball a lot well towards the end of last season too. And so I think I was actually in Miami when I saw the trade happen. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, I think a step in the right direction for the Jazz. Cause like you said, we have had so many point guards, and just unlucky with a lot of the situations that we had as far as injuries and everything. But, you know, that was a bold step by them. I think he's going to help their team next year for sure.
You said it, that it's kind of a fine line between saying, yeah, I like Ricky. I'd love to play with him if I stay, but not, like you said, sort of leading them on to think if you do A, B, and C, then I'm staying. Did that make it hard to have those conversations? Because you thought you might stay, but at the same time, you're trying to be honest with them about where your head was.
Yeah. And I had a great conversation with Quinn about that. I think it was in June, I think, of basically exactly what you're just describing. And he understood the situation I was in, and he was great about it the whole time. But they wanted to be kind of transparent about what they were thinking and their thoughts and, you know, wanted my opinion on it. And so it was a fine line of, you know, I don't want to sit here and make demands and guarantee I'm going to come back or anything like that. But at the same time, you know, I thought there was a chance I would be back in Utah. Right. So, you know, I would have loved to play with Ricky.
Like, I think Chris Paul in the weeks leading up to free agency after the season, and I was told Chris was not really in much communication with the Clippers and then made the decision that he was going to leave. You, on the other hand, Johnny Bryant, who's an assistant coach with the Jazz, was down, I think, here with you working out. You were still very connected to the organization. Sometimes teams feel if a guy starts to go dark on them or quiet, it's a signal. What was your thought about how you wanted to communicate with them and how that, what the right way about it was to go?
Yeah, I mean, I can remember sitting in the exit meeting and discussing this exact, the exit meeting at the end of the year with Dennis and Quinn. And, you know, everybody knew that I was a free agent and that I had a decision to make. But we discussed that we just treat it as if I was still a part of the team. And the summer that I had last year with Johnny Bryant and Isaiah Wright, the guys that I trained with, Johnny and I have a tremendous relationship and we'll continue to have that relationship even though he's with the Jazz and I'm with the Celtics. But I trusted him and wanted to continue to get better. And, he came out to San Diego to train me. And, same with Isaiah Wright. He's actually the strength coach of the Jazz and we had a good thing going and I appreciate those guys so much for what they did, because they for sure didn't have to do it. I was a free agent and, it was kind of a tricky situation because I'm sure if you were to ask the Celtics guys or the Heat guys, they wouldn't have liked that I was training with Jazz personnel and Jazz people. But I think for me, it was something where I had a relationship that was beyond just the Jazz, beyond basketball. And like I said, I trusted those guys. And so I don't think that they thought I was leading them on. I think mm-hmm. I had told them that I was, you know, like I said, going to go check out these other teams and see what the deal was. And so I think we all kind of had that understanding.
Right. So let's go through the 4 days a little bit. You flew, I believe you paid for your own private plane to fly in on the 30th so you could get going right away on July 1 because a team can't technically do that till July 1, right?
Right.
To go to
That's
Miami.
Right. Yeah, June 30th we flew there. It's a long ways to fly from San Diego to Miami and we wanted to make sure we were there and rested and I think we could have done a red eye, but just decided we wanted to be fully, yeah. you know, engaged in the meeting. So
you walk in, you get up in the morning on July 1, you go where with the Heat guys? How does it begin?
Yeah. So, wake up and we went to their arena. All their facilities are in Miami. They're at their arena. Right. And so we go there and, you know, we meet Pat Riley, and my wife is with me for all of this, and we meet Pat Riley's wife, and both of them are outstanding people, and immediately you're just you're hit with like this family vibe that they have, because we eat breakfast, you know, they have a lot of their staff there, and we meet the owner's son and his wife, and it was very, very casual and just, you know, hey, how you'd like to introductory, like get to know us, type sit down type, breakfast and meeting. And, that was really cool because I think all the teams understood that, you know, you weren't just trying to recruit me, but you had to recruit my wife. I'm a big family guy and we have two little girls. And, so making sure that Robin was comfortable and, she was going to be comfortable was a huge part of it. And they did a tremendous job of that. And after, you know, we sat down and kind of just talked with everybody, we then went and kind of toured the facility and went and viewed the practice court and went out to the main floor and just walked around and saw the locker room and the weight room and everything. And facilities were obviously really, really nice. And, you know, then you kind of get into the basketball meeting where the girls, they kind of went off their separate way. And I got to talk with Pat and with Spo, and, kind of we started talking about the most important parts. So
Pat Riley, did you have just, you heard all the stories about, you know, he goes in, recruits the big three. Pat is Pat. He's a bigger than life figure. As much as anybody in this whole process, were you just like, I'm really curious what it's going to be like getting recruited by Pat Riley?
Yeah, that was something I was interested in for sure. And, you know, Mark had tried to tell me, you know, you're going to...
Your agent, Mark Bartleson.
Mark Bartleson had tried to tell me, you know, after you talk with him, you're going to be like, Mark, I'm ready to sign right now. And you do get that vibe from him. I mean, he's a great motivator. And we watched some videos, too, of the Heat and their tradition. And, you know, he definitely makes you feel like you're going to be competing for championships year in and year out. And, beyond the basketball part, I was curious just to kind of see what type of guy in person he was. Mm-hmm. And just seemed like he was, to me in the meeting, just seemed like he was really family guy with his wife. And I think they said that they had actually either met or got married out here in San Diego and
La Jolla. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so we had that connection right away, which was kind of cool. But it just seemed like he was a good guy, and that was important to me too. And so, he was, I think it's like, if like my dad or, you know, my father-in-law, that generation more, he's like more of a legend because, you know, they kind of grew up with him. I'm starting to get to the point where he's almost beyond me as far as years. Like my wife, Robin, had no clue who he was. And I'm sure that's refreshing to him to have somebody that, you know, doesn't necessarily know. But he was definitely, definitely really cool to talk to and meet.
And I think, you know, Mark had said this to me prior to the process that, you know, because you're such a basketball junkie, that the coach, it's no accident. You look at the three coaches in this process, Quinn Snyder, Eric Spoelstra, and obviously Brad Stevens, three elite coaches. One you've developed to an all-star under in Quinn and Brad, who obviously had tremendous development with, recruited you. And then Spo, who's won two championships and certainly is at the top of the game. Was he maybe the biggest wild card in this because you didn't know him? You knew the other two coaches. And I think Miami felt that a little bit too, that their disadvantage in this was they were the one place when you walked in, there was nobody in the room who knew you. And the other two places had people who knew you, and especially the head coach.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very accurate statement. I went into Miami completely fresh, not really knowing anybody. And, you know, Mark Bartleson had told me how much he admired Spo and how much he thought of him as a tremendous coach. And so it was something where I went into it curious and intrigued to talk with him and see his philosophies and his thoughts. And I definitely was not disappointed in the meeting that I had. I mean, like we said at the beginning, it goes by so fast. I think we talked for 45 minutes and we probably could have talked for another hour and a half and it would have been fine. And so it went by really quick, but it was a great meeting with Spo. We just talked one-on-one too. And, you know, he's a tremendous coach. You can see it just, I could feel it just in that meeting.
See, to me, that would be the really hard thing, that when you have this really tight window and you've never met the people before, you would think you would want to have multiple conversations, multiple meetings, getting into lots of specifics before you made such a big commitment. And in the end with Miami, was that as hard? Was it maybe a little easier to eliminate them because the time frame doesn't allow that? And you're like, well, I just know the other places better. Would it have just been hard to pick a place that you just, as impressive as they were, you'd go, I just don't know how well I know them?
For me, I don't think that's the case because they were available throughout the whole thing.
Right.
And it's a decision that I made, not just on one facet of,
right,
like not just only the coach.
Right.
And so it kind of was involved everything. And I got a chance to talk with him, one-on-one for, like I said, about 45 minutes, but you know, you also, talk with the assistants and the players were there as well. So it's bigger than just, you know, only right. just talking with them, but you're right. It's very tough because you feel like you could go back there again.
Yeah.
And, you know, have another conversation, think about it again. But at the end of the, I mean, you could go back and forth countless times.
Sometimes with Pat, he'll create some drama where you get people tell you, you'll get chills. Where it's like a moment where he said something or did something that you said, wow. Like, or was it just more of a conversation?
Like I said, there was a video that was played and after the video, he kind of talked a little bit and that was the moment where you kind of do get some chills. Like, and everyone's wearing their ring too.
Yeah.
Everybody on the staff was. And so that's the moment where you're like, wow, that's really cool. And I want to put on the jersey right now type feeling.
So when you leave there, you say to yourself, you call Mark that night, or you and your wife are alone after, you're on your way to Boston. You say what when you walk out of Miami to them, to her, like you're thinking what?
Yeah. I think the text that I sent to Mark was, wow, that's going to be really tough to beat, or something like that. I asked Robin and she said something like she could see herself living there. That would be a really great place for us to be. I really liked, you know, such and such and such of the wives, and I could have a good relationship with them. And it was all positive stuff. It just, it was something where it's like, okay, now let's try to just put that aside and go into Boston with a clean slate.
The Woj Pod.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to make the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, W-O-J. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. And now back to my conversation with Gordon Hayward. So you get to Boston, you get to the airport, and Brad Stevens and Micah Shrewsbury, who Micah was also an assistant at Butler, did you expect to see them waiting for you there?
I did not, no. Well, because Miami, so we took a commercial flight from Miami to Boston, and so it was a little different just because of that.
Right. And now, are there people on the flight, Boston people, who recognize what you're going up for, say, or did no one notice what you're, like, did they?
Yeah, there was a bunch of people that.
Yeah, like, we know what you're going here for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they were like, you're coming to Boston, let's go, like, trying to hype up Boston. But it was funny because when we landed in, and this is kind of just different approaches, I guess, to different styles maybe of the visits. But when we land in Miami, you know, we're immediately greeted with the Miami security, the guy in charge of security from Miami. And, you know, we had a police escort and an undercover policeman rolling behind us. And we get to the hotel and we're going through a back door just so nobody bothers us. And we, you know, right to the room. And it was like really just like first class as far as security is concerned. Like there was no annoyances, anything like that. And then you get to Boston and you just have Brad and Shrews at the terminal. No security whatsoever. Right. I'm taking pictures at baggage claim, like with fans, like just kind of completely the opposite.
It might as well been an unofficial to Butler. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But just like I said, just a different style of doing it. But when we get there, I had an immediate sense of familiarity and, it did kind of bring me back to like the recruiting days with Brad. And so
like you know Brad and you've kept your relationship with him, but you know, you're not the same kid that he recruited as a teenager and he's not the same coach. Was there any part of you going, are we going to pick right back up? You have this thing in your past that's almost perfect. Like you have this, you know, if you bank that.
Almost
perfect. but it was storybook. And I know it didn't end. If that shot banks in, it's the greatest story ever told in college basketball. And even without it, what you guys did at Butler's is incredible as I think anything that's gone on in the last 20 years. Was there any part of you that said, do I want to mess with that? Or did it just, with him, just feel like he and I will always fit? We fit now.
There was a huge part of me that just wondered, you know, kind of just wondered if we would still have the same relationship. I think the relationship between Brad and I has been completely overstated and overhyped from everybody. And you mentioned it, like there was always rumors about going to Boston, and those to me were always just rumors. Like I didn't really ever think about it because, you know, I wasn't free agent, wasn't really concerned with the Boston thing, but everybody else was saying, oh, he's going to go to Boston because of Brad. And we had a great relationship, but it wasn't like we were constantly texting each other or calling each other or, you know, he's the head coach of the Boston Celtics. Right. He's got things to worry about.
And you played longer for Quinn Snyder than you had played for
Brad
Stevens.
I played for Brad for 2 years.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like everybody kind of made it seem like we were besties or something.
Right.
And, but so I what that was something that I kind of was, you know, what's this going to be like? I mean, it's been 7 years since he coached me. And immediately though, he called me, July 1, and after that phone call, I thought like, oh no, this isn't going to be any different. It was one of those things where he made me feel like even if I don't go to Boston, it'll be fine. And we'll still have that great relationship and he'll still be in my corner and he'll still be rooting for me and support me. And so I got that feeling too. As soon as like he's driving, you know, we didn't have a driver. He's the one that picked me up and he's the one that drove me to the hotel and we got lost a couple times on the way. but it was that all those thoughts were put to bed.
The visit in Boston's such a different town. It's a small, like if you're an athlete, a great athlete in Boston, there's not, you know, you can sort of hide out in LA or New York. Boston is so intense and compact and you've gone there as a visitor. That's not what Salt Lake is. And Miami's even a little different, but the intensity of that town sports wise and how the Celtics fit into that. Could you feel that in those 24 hours, like going around?
I mean, I felt it a little bit at the airport.
Yeah.
That was really the only time that we were kind of around people. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in the visits,
you're in meetings.
You're in meetings the whole time and you're constantly like traveling to places. We did stop by Fenway, which I'm not a baseball person at all, but you know, that was still really cool. There's probably like 3 or 4 ballparks that if you go to that are legendary ballparks. And so that was cool being there. I will say that after I ended up choosing Boston, we went back to Boston. We were going to do the press conference there and my wife and I went out to eat and we didn't know where to go. In Boston, I probably only with the Jazz, we go there once a year and a lot of times it may be on a back to back. So I usually just stay in the room, don't really venture out too far. So this is the first time that I've kind of been in the city and we had to I don't know if you saw, but we had to get a, I accidentally forgot my suit for the press conference. So we had to stop and get a suit. Ended up just, we didn't have time. We were going to go to Saks, but didn't have time. So we jumped out the car and just went to Joseph A. Bank, which I got killed on. But that was, so that whole night we got the suit and we ended
so
up going.
So you just forgot one or you just didn't, you didn't pack it?
I did pack it. Okay. And it was packed up and ready to go. I just forgot it.
Yeah. Yeah. I do it every week.
Yeah. So we had to go get one. But then after that, we wanted to go to dinner and we were just walking around the city. We didn't know. And, I could feel it then though. Of the intensity, and we went to the North End and I got my hair cut and we almost like just had a night in the heart of Boston. And that was really cool. Cause we kind of just jumped in and you could feel just everybody was excited and, you know, saying how happy people were that I was in Boston. And I could just feel what you were talking about. It was a different feeling for sure.
How did you balance, like, you know, when you go in and the history is such a part of it, like, the championships, the great players, all those things, and they're present is obviously, it's an elite team. How much does any of that other stuff matter? Or was it all, what does this team look like? What is my chance to win there, to fit? How did you compare that with the Celtic lore? Did it mean much in any of it?
Yeah, I think the Celtic lore for me, and this goes back to like, kind of how I grew up. I mean, Larry was, I think I was a little too young. He was kind of right at the time where I was too young to watch. And so I didn't really grow up like watching the Celtics. I think the Celtic lore to me, it's special because of how invested the fans are and how invested the organization is to winning and to greatness. And, you know, to have players accomplish what they've accomplished in that building and, on the floor it's a special feeling. But for me, it was a lot of, you know, I want to try to continue that greatness with the team that they have now.
Right.
And you got to move forward. And Utah is similar in that they've had tradition of success with John and with Carl and Jerry Sloan. And so I'd felt some of that before, mm-hmm. obviously not on any level near the Celtics. You know, they have 17 championships, but it meant that, I guess to answer your question, it was something where they're so successful and have such a tradition of success that you know that the fans are going to be invested in you and that it's going to be a fun atmosphere to play in for sure.
Had you known Isaiah Thomas really before the visit? Had you spent any time with him?
So I had said what's up to him at the All-Star break and we were both in the, what was the challenge that we did? The
skills
challenge.
Yep. Yep.
And like that was pretty much the only time I talked to him. There wasn't anything said there that would have been like, hey, come to Boston.
Right.
I think I knocked him out of the skills challenge. So that was about it. We didn't have much of a relationship.
What did you talk about when you visited there?
We really talked about going and getting Banner 18 more than anything. That was kind of a focus for the meetings is how can we get a championship? How can we bring one? And it was to have players come and players at all three places actually showed up, which means a lot because the off season time that we have is limited. And so for people to take that time to come and see me in a visit, I know Isaiah does a lot in his off season and he's from the Washington area, which is completely on the other side. So for him to come in and see me and his wife came in too, I think they said she took a red eye or something. Mm-hmm. And, we went out to eat and, you know, that meant a lot. And when we just talked about basketball, it was pretty much bringing a championship to Boston.
And I know you met with owners, you meet with Danny Ainge, who's great. I think Danny's great at articulating what it means to play there. And then also I think Danny's, doesn't ever get too caught up in the history. It's about what are we doing next. So he lays it out for you. So you're on your way out. Is it exactly like Miami where you say, okay, I'll go to Boston. Like, did it just feel like it would be easy to say yes to?
Yeah. I mean, The meetings went great. Al Horford actually was there for breakfast and then continued the whole day with us. And then we went out to eat with IT and his wife for dinner. But I had talked with both of them before. Mm-hmm. He had actually called me when I was here in San Diego just to talk because he had been in a similar situation. Yep. And after we did the meetings with the owners and with Danny and, you know, they break it down of, you know, how can they help me be a better player? How can I help them? Then it was just, I did a meeting just with me and Brad and we broke down film of, you know, this is where he sees I would be at in plays and this is where he's going to use me. And this is how, you know, we're going to guard people. This is, you know, kind of on film showing me, which was really cool to see. You know, then I met with Danny right before and I did leave. Brad actually again drove, Brad and Tracy drove me to, and Robin to the airport again. And I did leave there like with the same type of feeling, like, man, that was incredible. Like that would be a really fun place to live. That would be an unbelievable place to play. The culture and history there is incredible. And I want to be a part of that history. And we had, it was like 6.5 hours to basically think about it, mm-hmm. flying all the way back to San Diego. So leaving that visit, you for sure, I mean, my mind's already just like torn. Like, I don't know what to do.
So you fly back to San Diego. Instead of doing the meeting in Utah, you guys decided to do it here. Was that the one going into it where your emotions, you're trying to take the emotion out of this process because you can ride the roller coaster. Mm-hmm. But I think Utah wanted to have the last crack at you. And I think for you probably to have other places to compare to them, right? And let them come in last.
Yeah.
Was it different emotionally preparing for Quinn Snyder, Dennis Lindsay, you know, Joe Ingles came in, your teammates, you know, Ricky Rubio flew from Spain. I think Rudy Gobert. Was it different emotionally having them? I mean, I imagine they came right down the driveway here into the door. What did you feel sort of as they were coming in? Did it just feel different than the other places?
Yeah, it did. And it was, I didn't know exactly who was going to show up. Actually, when I answered the door, it was Gail and Greg Miller, the owners. And then you have Dennis and Quinn and Steve Starks. Mm-hmm. And it is a different feeling because you just feel like you know them. Like I just competed with them a whole, we had a playoff run that was something that I had never been a part of. That was, you know, a lot of fun. And so it's kind of, initially a little bit awkward because it's something where, like I said, you're just like on their side and now you're kind of like removed. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be on your side again next time. And, so you have initial awkwardness, but then after that wears off, I mean, it was immediate, just, we're going to talk, let's talk basketball. And we sat down in the living room and they had an amazing presentation that they showed me. And, at the end of the presentation, that's when Rudy and Ricky and Joe and Rodney Hood came mm-hmm. in. And like I said, for them to fly over here is, I mean, it's incredible for them to do that.
So they just knocked on the door at some point?
They came in. I think somebody must have let them in. Johnny Bryant was here, yeah. And he let them in. And they came in at the end of the presentation as like a surprise.
Was that emotional for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was. The part that was emotional was when Greg was talking about bringing a title to Utah.
Greg Miller. Part of the ownership.
Yes. Gail's son.
Yep.
And his dad, Larry Miller, Gail's late husband, had passed away, and you know he wants to bring a championship for him, who wanted to bring it to the community. And the Salt Lake fans are so passionate, and this last year they just basically, I'm gonna make this like really generic, but they basically just gave the franchise to the city, mm-hmm. kind of like Green Bay did right. with the Packers. And so that part's the emotional part, because you know you're basically playing for the city and playing for the fans, and everybody's so invested, and that's where we had to kind of try to get that emotional part. I've been there and have been through the process of the rebuild and going through 25 wins and, you know, 30 point blowout losses each and every night to where we were last year, where mm-hmm. we're, you know, winning a playoff series. And guys are finally being recognized for their achievements. Rudy is recognized second team All-NBA, which is a tremendous accomplishment. I got recognized as an All-Star, and mm-hmm. you know, I still think he probably should have been Defensive Player of the Year, but to go from basically where we're at all the way to, I mean, that was a process, and that there's a lot of emotions that go into that. So
what did they leave you with? Like at the end, what was sort of the final word in that Utah visit? The final message?
The final message was probably, you know, let's take another step towards winning a title. You know, we've come this far, and you know, we feel like we're only going to get better. Let's take another step. And you could see the steps that they laid out, and you could see the vision for it. And then when the players come in, it only, you know, mm-hmm. makes it even more, and makes it look like it's more something that you can accomplish. And that was kind of the final word was, you know, we need you to come back for us to take another step, and let's do it.
You weren't upset with the Jazz that they just blew their whole salary cap on your guy, Joe Ingles, that he just.
No, I actually, that's the first thing I said to him when I walked in was congrats. Cause I hadn't really talked to him about it. And for him, as one of my good friends, yep. and he'll still be a good friend of mine, to basically go from cut from yep. a team to then, yep. what is it, 54?
Yeah, 50. I don't know, I think 52, I reported 53.
52,
I
don't something know. Like whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
$50 million dollars
yep.
in the NBA. It's a hell of a deal for him, so I'm happy for him.
The Woj Pod.
Gordon, we'll get back to our conversation in a minute. But first, I've got to tell my listeners about Blue Apron and how they can get 3 free meals just by using my name, Woj. Guys, not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference. So it's important to know where your food comes from, and we all know that there's nothing better than a great home-cooked meal, and no one makes it easier for you to do that than Blue Apron. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their suppliers and only bring you the best ingredients and all of it right to your door. Plus, each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Now, listen closely because this is the part about the 3 free meals I was telling you about. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free along with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/woj. Think about that. That's 3 free meals just by typing in my name. Once again, that's blueapron.com/woj. W-O-J. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Now let's get back to our guest, Boston Celtics forward, Gordon Hayward.
So when the Jazz leave your house and it's you and Robin, now this is July 3rd, what's the conversation that night? What's the back and forth between you two?
Just, like, I kind of have a stomach feeling where, like, your stomach just gets, like, you don't know what, like, you're just... It's like that nervous stomach feeling of, I don't know what to do. Like, I really don't know what to do. Like, what do you think I should do? You know, and then we'll go through like, well, you know, in Boston or Miami, you got this, that's really good. You know, here's all the pros. And then it's like, but, you know, here's some cons. And if we stay in Utah, you know, we have this and this and we're really comfortable and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And, but you have this. And so it's constantly just back and forth of that game, which we'd done for so long, and just torn, I guess, just kind of like, there was a point in time where we wanted to say, let's just not think about it for a little bit. And when you have 2 little girls that could literally care less right. about basketball right now, it was easy to just say, all right, let's just stop thinking about it. We took them on a walk. Let's just put it out of our minds for a little bit, because when you're constantly thinking about something, sometimes it gets tough to have a clear vision of it.
And how much do you feel, because the whole league is stopped, like the league is stopped waiting for your decision because there's going to be a domino effect with lots of other things. Do you sense that, or are you just isolated from that greater, are you going to make up your mind here, right. man? Right?
Yeah, no, I my phone was blowing up, and from a lot of different people, from Celtics players, from Celtics coaches, from Miami, from players on Utah's team.
Yeah,
Joe Ingles has hit me up. Rudy's hit me up.
Joe was very disappointed you were there on him, by the way, but he understood.
Right. Yeah. And I had to. I felt like I can't just keep having these conversations. Right. Everybody was...
You're just going in circles.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
That's exactly what I'm doing. And so I ended up just not responding to anybody. The only people that I respond to was Mark, pretty mm-hmm. much. It was like, I didn't want to make a decision based off of I'm holding everybody up.
Right.
But at the same time, like, that's why we had told teams, like, we'll probably make a decision on the fourth, just because we don't want to drag this thing out. And we know that teams are waiting and they have other people that they want to go after if I decide to, you know, not choose them. So that was a long night for sure.
Going through the third and then into the fourth, how much at that point were you looking at Utah in the West and Golden State? And when you imagine what Utah could be, if you stayed, Ricky's obviously here, and you look at the other pieces, what did you think that Jazz team could be? And does Golden State, does it have to impact your thinking?
I think it's... Golden State is obviously the team to beat. Whether you're in the West or the East, you have to play them at some point in time. I think that I thought in Utah we matched up pretty well with them. Just the style that we played, mm-hmm. Some of the guys that we had, I thought that we matched up pretty well. We unlucky with George and his injury, right. But. We had moments against them, even though we got swept. We had moments against them where I thought, you know, we could maybe make a run at them.
Yeah, and I thought even in that series, if George is healthy, I didn't think you got swept in that series. Did you feel that way?
The games at home, I thought we were right there. Mm-hmm. I think we do have a healthy George. It's probably a little different.
Yeah.
Maybe we sneak a game, but they're still a juggernaut.
Right.
But then, you know, when we're going through this process and you keep seeing – some of the big name guys, and it's like the West is loading up more and more mm-hmm. and more. It's not something where it's not like I'm going to go East just so I don't have to play them, because you don't want to run from competition at all. That's not how I am. But there is a sense that it's probably the smarter thing, as far as you don't have to have the same, like you're not going to have to battle it out with all these teams just to make it to the second round, make it to right. the third round, you know, giving yourself a better chance against the Golden State. So it definitely crosses your mind, 100%.
When you see, you know, Jimmy Butler goes to Minnesota, Paul George goes to Oklahoma City, you know, even Millsap goes to Denver and they'll be better. And the other thing, too, is like you want to be an all-star again. You want to be a – it is not easy, as you know, to break through and become an all-star in the Western Conference. Like you earn that because mm-hmm. there's so much. And then you have Paul at your position. You have Jimmy coming in. Like, is that human nature that you do think about that too? Because some of those things are important.
Yeah, and I think that you look at the division that the Jazz are in, and that is a tough division. Oklahoma City, Minnesota, Portland, Denver, like – that's going to be a really, really tough division for you. You're playing those teams four times a year. The All-Star thing it's going to be hard no matter what division you're in, but certainly with the amount of stars that are in the Western Conference now, especially at the forward position too.
Right.
It's loaded, and you know, you better have a really good first half of the season if you want to get in. And a lot of that to me always comes down to how your team does.
Right.
If your team is winning, then it's going to be a lot easier for you. So that, like I said, that for sure crosses your mind.
At what point, July 3rd, late at night here with Robin, or tossing and turning probably all night, getting up in the morning, when did you feel that Boston maybe was starting to separate itself from the others?
I kind of felt like I had a lot of conversations with Mark on speakerphone, and I think I was kind of leaning towards Boston when I went to sleep. but it was by no means like a, like I wanted to, when I made the decision, I wanted it to be like, this is, I am 100% certain this is where I want to go. I didn't want there to be any, I wanted it to be like, when I make a decision, there's no regrets at all. And that's where I want to be. And I don't want to have an ounce of doubt at all. And there was still doubt in my mind when I went to sleep. And so I was for sure leaning there, but then, you know, I woke up and immediately got back on the phone with Mark, and he's 3 hours different from East Coast. So that's automatically making everybody
right
wait even longer.
Right.
But immediately you get back on the phone with Mark, and he's already been on the phone, you know, with Danny and with Dennis, and basically gave me their rundown again. And even in that short phone call, he gave me Danny's pitch, and then we went over Dennis's pitch again, and I was like, Mark, like, dude, I don't know what to do now. Like, they both sound really, really good. Like, I don't know. How are we going to make this decision? And ended up kind of just talking it out more than anything with him. And that's kind of where we're on the process of doing that. And that's kind of when the leak happened. And, you know, I'm talking with Mark and, like I said, for sure leaning towards Boston, but not made up my mind at all. And now my phone's blowing up and I'm like, Mark, are you seeing this? Like, apparently we just made a decision. And he's like, what are you talking about? And, you know, he's looking and he's freaking out, and he's like, all right, hold on. Let's go. Let me go deal with this. And so give him the time to, I think he probably talked to you mm-hmm. and talked to a bunch of other people and said, you know, we still haven't made up our mind yet. We still got to figure this thing out. And, you know, that's, so we took at least, an hour or two to let that all settle down. Mm-hmm. And I guess just, I didn't want to make it. I felt like there was a lot of pressure because everyone's already saying the decision's been made, and I still wasn't for sure thinking Boston's the way to go. So wanted to then think about it for a little bit longer and didn't want to make my decision based off of the pressure that everyone else is putting on me, that, you know what I mean? Like Twitter and everything's mm-hmm. blown up. And so, you know, we took a couple more hours, and then I finally like made up my mind, like, all right, this is what I wanted to do.
How much did you dread the call to Utah?
Yeah, it was, I am first off terrible at doing that stuff. It's a hard thing to do, and I would have dreaded the call. I would have dreaded the call no matter what. Right. If it was. And so it was, I called Quinn, and just, you know, you gotta have to tell him. And he was great about it. And he actually, before I made the decision, when he came and when we met, he pulled me aside towards the end and kind of just said, hey, no matter what your decision is, I'm still going to be in your corner. And, you know, if it's with us, I think it should be with us, I'm going to be ecstatic. If it's not with us, I'm still going to be supportive and we'll still have a good relationship. And that meant a lot to me. And so I knew that going into the phone call, and that made it a little better for me, a little mm-hmm. easier. Obviously, he was disappointed, and it didn't last too long, the phone call. But, you know,
he didn't try to change your mind. No. And did you appreciate that?
I did.
Yeah,
I did, because that's the one thing that I love about Quinn is he's really understanding and gets it. Like, he understands it, and he knew this was a really difficult decision for me, and knew what the deal was. And so it was a quick combo, and he said good luck, and, you know, that was it. And then after that, I called Johnny Bryant, who's like my guy, and told him too, and it was the same thing, same type of, you know, this is bigger than basketball and I'll still be there for you. So
what did Quinn Snyder mean to your career?
Quinn Snyder meant, it's hard to put into words. I mean, he helped me turn myself into an all-star. He, I feel like, saved me from a dark place where I was at. You know, we won 25 games, and I hate losing more than anything, and kind of helped turn that ship around and change the culture in Utah a little bit. And, you know, helped me grow as a player, as a person. And, you know, he was tremendous for me.
The one thing I want to ask with Utah, you went through restricted free agency with them 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reporting on it, and I think like the offer might have been on a 4-year deal, like, I don't know, like you think now it's crazy to think what, but it might have been like low 50s, high 40s, low 50s, and then you got up to 58 when you got the offer sheet from Charlotte. Restricted free agency is always difficult. It pits players and teams, and there's always lots of bad feelings. Teams say, go get an offer sheet. Like, why should we give it to you if you don't have it? And then you did. You got it from Charlotte, and then, of course, they matched it.
Mm-hmm.
Did it leave hard feelings at the time with you where you just didn't say, well, why don't you just, if you believe in me, why don't you just give me the max and I don't have to go do this? Did that linger?
It lingered for maybe a little bit of time at the beginning of when I signed it. There was none of those feelings were there this time around. Right. But like you said, restricted free agency is it's a little weird.
It brings out the worst in everybody.
It really does. And it's hard because as a player, you're sitting there thinking like what the hell? Like you look at all these other players where teams are like, he's our guy, like we're going to give him the max, blah, blah, blah. And you know, I got to go out and get one. Like, do you not believe in me? Like, do you not feel like I'm the guy for you? From a team's perspective, it's the smartest thing to do. Like, why would we overpay you until somebody else makes us, essentially?
Right.
You know what I mean? So I can for sure see it from both sides, but it's restricted free agency is weird.
Yeah. In the end, when like you choose Boston, you said, like, you've got to crystallize. Like you said, there's so many things where you're probably splitting hairs and you're making lists. Was there one thing where you just crystallized it and said, this is why it feels right?
I don't know if there was one thing. I think if I would have stayed in Utah, we would have been really good. It would have been a great situation for me. My family would have been comfortable. They were. We loved it there. But it was just it was a different feeling in Boston that I had. It was like a gut feeling and felt like, with everything that we broke down, the city, the coaching staff, the players, just the feeling of putting on a Boston Celtics uniform and competing for a title outweighed everything else for me. And in the end, it was kind of that gut feeling that I had, like, this is the place that I think I should be and that I feel like I belong. That's what won it over for me.
You look back at the process now, and like you said, you imagined how it might go, what it might feel like. What was the part of it that maybe you misjudged or you just said, I couldn't have known that this was going to be as difficult as it was? Is there anything you look back on and say, but I didn't anticipate that?
I definitely didn't anticipate the July 4th thing happening, like when the leak happened, and I guess I just didn't anticipate anything to that. I didn't anticipate, I guess, my decision being that big of a deal, mm-hmm. like on social media and on Twitter and on, mm-hmm. and on everything when it happened. And so that part was for sure the one thing that I didn't think would have happened.
Well, you think though, when you get drafted, I mean, you get a scholarship from Brad at Butler and, you know, you get drafted in the lottery, but I'm not sure people pegged you necessarily that you were going to be a max player, that you were going to be an all-star. Was there still a part of you going, you know what, like, hey, this is what happens to stars in this league. This is the star treatment. As difficult as it was, is there a part of you going, I guess it beats the alternative of nobody caring?
Yeah. I mean, I could have never in my wildest dreams imagined that this would happen, that I would be living in San Diego and just signing the deal that I signed to play for the Boston Celtics. It's and we kind of talked about it this year. I think it was in Philly. Just to go from Brad being really one of the only ones that recruited me to kind of him first saying, I think you have a shot to be in the NBA, to then not just being in the NBA, but being an impact guy in the NBA and to be an all-star and to have kind of the whole world watching to see where I'm going to go. That's a pretty cool feeling. And so it definitely beats the alternative, yeah.
Gordon, I appreciate you taking time out and doing this, man. It was fun to run through this with you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, Boston forward Gordon Hayward. Remember, you can subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your shows. You can also hear the Woj Pod every Wednesday and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. I'd also like to take a moment to thank our sponsors today, Blue Apron and ZipRecruiter. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Woj Pod. We'll catch you next time.